I'm going to be reading from 1 Corinthians 15, verse 58, and then we're going to slip over to 1 Corinthians 16, verses 5 to 18. Therefore, my dear brothers and sisters, stand firm. Let nothing move you. Always give yourselves fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labour in the Lord is not in vain. After I go through Macedonia, I will come to you, for I will be going through Macedonia. Perhaps I will stay with you for a while, or even spend the winter, so that you can help me on my journey wherever I go. For I do not want to see you now and make only a passing visit. I hope to spend some time with you if the Lord permits. But I will stay on at Ephesus until Pentecost, because a great door for effective work has opened to me, and there are many who oppose me. When Timothy comes, see to it that he has nothing to fear while he is with you, for he is carrying on the work of the Lord just as I am. No one then should treat him with contempt. Send him on his way in peace, so that he may return to me. I am expecting him along with the brothers. Now about our brother Apollos, I strongly urged him to go to you with the brothers. He was quite unwilling to go now, but he will go when he has the opportunity. Be on your guard. Stand firm in the faith. Be courageous. Be strong. Do everything in love. You know that the household of Stephanas were the first converts in Achaia, and they have devoted themselves to the service of the Lord's people. I urge you, brothers and sisters, to submit to such people and to everyone who joins in the work and labours at it. I was glad when Stephanas, Fortunatus, and Achaicus arrived, because they have supplied what was lacking from you, for they refreshed my spirit and yours also. Such men deserve recognition.
Two, three, four. How are we doing? My name's Tom. If I haven't met you before, doing some sign language with Anton on the sound desk there. Hey, if you have been with us for last year and this year, then you have reached the end of the book of 1 Corinthians. Well done for sticking with us for so long. If you're kind of newer, maybe even today is your first day, this message will still make sense without having touched any of the rest of 1 Corinthians. So glad you're here with us today. I wanted to particularly focus today's sermon, about the next 20, 25 minutes, on 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 58. We should get that up on the screen. It says, "Therefore, my dear brothers and sisters, stand firm, let nothing move you. Always give yourselves fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain." If you're a note taker or anything like that, the title for today would be something like "The Work of the Lord" or "Work That Is Not in Vain." Can I get a quick show of hands? Who got hit? Whose property got hit really hard by the rain this week? Okay, mine too. We did some work on our roof a couple of weeks ago. Turned out that labor was significantly in vain. Water came through. Water was on the floor. We got stung. I heard another story about some labor that was in vain recently. There were a couple of trees that were marked for being cut down by council workers. Big X on the tree. The person who doesn't know about that X is the birds trying to build their nest in the tree. And for a couple of weeks, they go about bringing in the sticks, building up their little empire, until one day, a couple of strokes of the chain, and all of their labor has been shown to be in vain. If you're anything like me, you hate it when your work turns out to be in vain. I don't know if you remember the days where we used to work on Microsoft Word and Microsoft Sheets before we got to Google Docs, Google Sheets. Remember how you used to be able to type a document, spend an hour on it, your computer would crash, it's all gone. Everything that you've worked on for the last hour turns out to be in vain. But it also turns out to be true that there is a way to work and a purpose to work for that is guaranteed to never be in vain. In that verse there, it says that if we're giving ourselves to the work of the Lord, then we can know that our labor in the Lord is not in vain. We're going to spend a lot of time camping out in this particular verse and using some of the surrounding verses to help us understand it more deeply. Here's a summary, in other words, of what I think that verse is trying to say. Because the resurrection is real, that's the rest of chapter 15, give yourself fully to the work of the Lord. And so we can ask ourselves from a different angle, what am I giving myself fully to? What dominates your time? What dominates your mind? What dominates your prayers? What dominates your heart? Maybe for you, it's as simple as your regular job. You know, your 9 to 5, your 8 to 6, whatever it is. That's the thing that you're giving yourself fully to. And actually, you even struggle to clock off now because you take your work home with you in your pocket and you're contactable in a way that we weren't 30 years ago. It's the thing that dominates your world is your work. Maybe for you, 2024 is the year that you decided, hey, I'm going to be a gym person. I'm going to be an exercise person. I'm going to give myself fully to my health. And every time that you see a spare minute come up, you're thinking about how can I insert some exercise into this moment? Because what you're giving yourself fully to is your health. And that's a great thing to give yourself to. Perhaps for you, and I imagine that this is particularly relevant for us in this service here today, you're giving yourself fully to your family. You say, if I get a spare minute, if I have some spare headspace, I'm going to do something to give to my spouse, to give to my kids, whatever it is. If I could bring us back to this main point for today, Paul is trying to encourage us that because the resurrection is real, there is something worth giving yourself fully to. And it's different from what most people in this area of the world give themselves to on a day-to-day basis. That you could give yourself fully to the work of the Lord. If we pull that verse up on the screen again, can I make one important clarification before we go any further? I don't think he means that everyone should go and work in a church or become a missionary or something like that. Part of the reason that you can tell that in this verse is it's written to the whole church in Corinth. There's no way that they could actually support themselves if they all quit and started working for the Corinthian church. And so he's telling a bunch of people who don't work in a church, have normal jobs, to give themselves fully to the work of the Lord. So you've just got to disassociate that idea of work from your regular job. Keep those two things separate. It seems that you can have a regular job and still give yourself fully to the work of the Lord. Now, here's the main question that it's going to unpack and actually reveal a little bit about what is on Paul's heart here. It's what actually is the work of the Lord? Believe it or not, there are a couple of different answers to this question. And we've gotten ourselves a little bit confused in church circles as we think about the work of the Lord. I've borrowed a couple of these insights from a Bible college lecturer called Peter Orr. He really helpfully points out why we've gotten ourselves so confused about what the work of the Lord is. First picture up here, this beautiful looking fellow is Martin Luther. It was in the middle of starting the Protestant Reformation. And he was really big on kind of undoing the separation that people had in their minds between sacred work and secular work. And he was really big on saying the guy up the front of the church is actually nothing special at all. He's just a regular guy doing a special thing. He was really big on saying that every single job, providing that it's kind of moral and ethical and it's contributing to the good of society, every single job has value in God's sight. And he's particularly responding to the idea that, the only job that has any value is if you're a priest or something. And so he said these words, God is milking the cows through the vocation of the milkmaid. So when we come to think about the work of the Lord, we get ourselves a little bit confused because we've got Martin Luther's true teaching. And at the same time, that's not what Paul is talking about in 1 Corinthians 15:58. A second thing that is confusing us at the moment is there's a very helpful pastor who was in New York until recently passed away called Tim Keller. He wrote a book called Every Good Endeavor, about work. Fantastic book, says a lot of really helpful things. One of the helpful things in it is this. He says, to be a Christian in business means more than just being honest and not sleeping with your co-workers. It means thinking out the implications of the gospel worldview. And so lots of people have dug deeply into that line of thinking, which is true and right and good. But if you're going to think about the work of the Lord as relating particularly to how your business dealings kind of flow out into the rest of your life, you're probably going to miss what Paul is particularly talking about in 1 Corinthians 15:58. See, Luther, Keller, all of these guys, they're saying true things, but it's not exactly what Paul is on about in today's verse. One of the ways you can tell that, if we can pull the verse back up on the screen, is to pay attention to the very first word, therefore. And if you've been out of church for a couple of weeks, let me catch you up. 1 Corinthians 15 is all about the core truths of the gospel, and particularly about Jesus' resurrection, which ensures our resurrection. It won't come up on the screen, but 15:20, if you've got it in front of you, chapter 15, verse 20, it says, Christ has indeed been raised from the dead, the first fruits of those who have fallen asleep. When you see first fruits, you know, it's spring and you go up to an apple tree and you see one small apple, you get excited because you know there's a whole tree worth of apples on the way. Jesus' resurrection is the first fruits of us being raised. Put that in really simple terms. Jesus was raised from the dead, and yes, we actually do think that really happened. And therefore, we will be raised after we die to be with Jesus as well. And you get all the way through this chapter. There's a little bit more chatter at the back end of chapter 15 about what kind of body do we have when we're raised. But you get all the way to chapter 15, verse 58, where we're camped out today, and you get an application of the fact that step one, Jesus was raised. Step two, we will be raised. Step three, therefore, stand firm, let nothing move you. Always give yourself fully to the work of the Lord. Can you see that giving yourself fully to the work of the Lord is an application of the fact that we one day will be raised? Now, Luther was talking about the milkmaid, but I don't think that really works. Jesus is raised, will be raised, therefore milk those cows with lots of gusto. Like, it doesn't really apply. Same thing in the Tim Keller example there. Excellent thought, but it's not really the application of chapter 15. We're trying to work out, what did Paul mean when he said, give yourself fully to the work of the Lord? And the first clue is that it's got to be an application of the rest of chapter 15. Because eternity is real, because this life does not end at death, therefore give yourself fully to the work of the Lord. A couple of other clues that we can get from the rest of the chapter that we had read to us. If you have a look with me in chapter 16, we'll start at verse 7, and pay attention to the idea of work as it's repeated and expanded upon. Paul's discussing his travel plans and whether or not he's going to come and visit the Corinthians, and he says, I do not want to see you now and make only a passing visit. I hope to spend some time with you if the Lord permits, but I will stay on at Ephesus until Pentecost because a great door for effective work has opened to me. And there are many who oppose me. Does anyone know what Paul's side hustle was? He supported himself by making tents. Now, he could be talking about making tents with all of his gusto. And he says, there's been a great job opportunity there at Tents R Us, and they need a new store manager. And I'm going to take... I don't think he's talking about that because of that last little bit of the sentence. There are many who oppose me. No one's opposing his tent-making work. What are they opposing? They're opposing his proclamation of the gospel. When Paul's thinking about this idea of work and labor, he seems to be thinking about some kind of gospel work. All work is valuable. All jobs, as long as they're ethical, are great. They contribute to the good of society. But he's not really talking about that right now. He's talking particularly about his gospel proclaiming work. Fortunately, that's not all we get to try and inform our understanding of it. Look at verse 10. We get another reference to work. And this is not about Paul's work, this is about Timothy's work. He says, when Timothy comes, see to it that he has nothing to fear while he's with you, for he's carrying on The work of the Lord. That's our phrase for today. Just as I am. So we can see that at very least, we know it's not just Paul who does the work of the Lord. It can also be Timothy. It can also be the whole Corinthian church that he's writing the instruction to. And if you read through the books of 1 and 2 Timothy, also in your Bible there, you'll realize the kind of work that Timothy was doing. And this is not about Timothy's kind of secular profession to support himself if he had one. And this is about Timothy going to those churches to edify the believers, bring about some order in what's going, preach the word in season and out of season. That's the kind of work that Timothy was doing. Can I give you one more reference? Chapter 16, verse 16. This is about Stephanas and his household. They were recently converted to the things of Christ. And he says, I urge you, brothers and sisters, to submit to such people like Stephanas and to everyone who joins in the work and labors at it. Seems like this is a thing that anyone can join in on, the work of the Lord. So if I could just show my cards really, really clearly, I've borrowed a lot of my thinking today from Bible College lecturer called Peter Orr, and he explains what the work of the Lord is in these words. He says, the work of the Lord, particularly in 1558, refers to what believers do to advance the gospel among unbelievers and to establish believers in the gospel. Did you catch that? Advance the gospel, establish believers. Advance the gospel, establish believers. So if we ask our question again, what is the work of the Lord? We get an answer that could be summarized something like this: evangelism and edification. Evangelism, bringing people into faith. Edification, deepening them in the faith or growing them up in the faith. That's particularly what I think Paul meant when he wrote his thing in 1 Corinthians 15, 58. And none of this is to say anything derogatory about any regular job. It seems, in fact, that you have a regular job and at the same time you're able to give yourself fully to the work of the Lord because it's not in vain. So if we could say our main point for today again, I'm just going to hammer this in a couple of times, see if anything sticks. Because the resurrection is real, give yourself fully to the work of the Lord. Now let's talk about a couple of elephants in the room, shall we? First elephant in the room is, Tom, you work in a church. Of course you're going to tell me to give myself fully to that kind of stuff. Very reasonable. There's enough people in the world telling you to do stuff that serves them that we don't need another one. Can I offer a couple of thoughts here? First one is, I do hope that you realize what we're doing today is studying the scriptures just chapter by chapter. We've gone through literally the whole of 16 chapters of 1 Corinthians. There are a couple of awkward bits, a couple of confusing bits that in our self-interest we probably could have skipped over, but we want to stick in the truths of the Bible and just let that speak into our lives. The truth that I think was worth communicating today is this truth that we're studying. And so I hope you're not feeling like I'm picking verses to kind of self-serving means, but we're actually just working chapter by chapter through the passage. Another way of approaching this question as well is to say, well, yeah, I do work in a church, that's true. That is one, all the convictions that we're talking about today, that the work of the Lord is not in vain, is one of the things that actually drives me to work in a church. And that might be something that slightly moves you in that direction as well. Jesus did say that the harvest is plentiful, and the thing that's the blockage to more harvest is that the workers are few. He said we need more laborers, we need more workers. That's a worldwide thing, not just a St. Ives thing. And maybe God today would actually help you take a step in that direction as well. That's one of the elephants in the room as we talk about giving yourself fully to the work of the Lord. Can we talk about a second one? Second elephant in the room would be to say, I don't even believe in the Lord. So why would I be giving myself fully to the work of the Lord? I'm so glad that you're here. So glad that you're in church considering the things of Christ. I think the question for you would be to ask, the things that you're giving yourself to, how long will they last? If you're anything like me, you want your work to last. You want the things that you give your time and effort to have some kind of enduring value. If it's true that Jesus really rose again from the dead, and therefore we will rise as well, then actually there's an opportunity for you to give yourself to something bigger than yourself. Some kind of purpose that is not only meaningful but also true and will outlast you. There's an opportunity there. And I would love for you to consider the rest of chapter 15 particularly on whether you think Jesus actually did rise again from the dead, because that is the centerpiece of the Christian faith. Third, and I think probably the hardest objection that we could get at this stage, which is, Tom, is this a do more sermon? Is this one of those sermons where the guy stands up the front and he says, I know you've got a full life, but I need you to pack another thing into it? Because it's just unrealistic, isn't it? You say, I'm struggling to keep up with all the things I'm already committed to. I'm struggling to look after all the people who already need my care. Don't give me another do more sermon. In response to that, can I say a couple of things that I'm not saying, if I could clarify these things? First thing that I'm not saying is that there are second-class Christians. There's no second-class Christians. If you believe in Jesus, you are a follower of him, you are his daughter, you are his son. There's no such thing as a second-class Christian. I'm also not saying that everyone should work for a church. I think we've covered that. And I'm also not saying that you should ignore your responsibilities. Some of you have very significant caring responsibilities and things that you've taken on that you should keep on holding. Here's what I am saying today, an encouragement and a gentle nudge. Let me give you the encouragement. First thing to note is that when Paul writes 1 Corinthians 15:58, he's writing it to people who are already going hard after the things of Jesus. They're already giving themselves to the work of the Lord. And that's why he doesn't say, please start giving yourself fully to the work of the Lord. What does he say? Therefore, stand firm, let nothing move you. He's asking them to continue, not to like pick up a whole new thing. And so let me just chase that line down for a second with us today. There are many of us in the room right now, and you are giving yourself fully to the work of the Lord. You might have only started doing that recently. You might have been doing it for 65 years. Can I encourage you today that the work that you are doing and the work that you have been doing sometimes doesn't look like it's working? Sometimes it feels like it's in vain. Maybe you think about you trying to do the work of the Lord of raising your kids in the faith. And you came into church today feeling really discouraged. Maybe one of them stayed home today because they were just like, I hate church, I don't want to go with you. And you're feeling discouraged in the work of the Lord. Can I encourage you today to stand firm, to let nothing move you, because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain. At that final resurrection day, when we enter into the things of eternity, you are not going to look back and wish that you'd done less to try and raise your kids in the Lord. You are probably going to wish that you'd done more, aren't you? Can I encourage you to keep at it, even when sometimes it doesn't look like it's working, because your labor in the Lord is not in vain. So I want to give you an encouragement and a gentle nudge. Now, imagine a scale here, and maybe at one end of the scale, sorry to the camera team for moving around so much online, stay with me if you can. There we go, I'm in line with the camera now. Imagine a scale at one side, you go, I never do any kind of work for the Lord. Maybe on the other end of the scale, it's like every single thought that I ever have, I'm consciously trying to maximize my effectiveness for the Lord. And I'll ask, where are you on that scale right now? And what would it look like for you to take just a step this way? What would it look like for you to take just a step that way? Here's a flurry of ideas. See whether any of them land with you. I would encourage you today, start that family Bible time that you've been thinking about. Reach out to that friend who doesn't know Jesus. Join that church team. Teach that scripture class. Attend that prayer group. Give to that missionary. There are 70,000 other ideas that could come up here. What's going through your mind? What would it look like in your world to take a simple step? Committing yourselves to the work of the Lord, because you know that even though a lot of things we do in life are in vain, no effort spent on God's behalf will ever be in vain. Now, there's a lot of people in this room, and I've alluded to this already, and one of the major juggles in your life, one of the major time pressures in your life is that you're trying to run a family. And I just want to point out one particular thing that really struck me from chapter 16, verse 15, that might help you as you think about the work of the Lord and your household. Notice this. It says, you know that the household of Stephanas were the first converts in Achaia. They've devoted themselves to the service of the Lord's people. What it doesn't say is Stephanas became a Christian and then Stephanas dedicated himself to the work of the Lord. It seems like there's something where it is possible to together do the work of the Lord. So this is not a do more sermon that says, please, I need you to spend two more nights out of the house ignoring your family during the week. It seems possible that the work of the Lord happens in the context of the household or alongside the other people of your household. Back then, a household might have included a whole range of people. Right now, your household probably includes people who you're biologically connected to. And I would ask you, what would it look like for you and your household to step forward in the work of the Lord? Others of us, and we'll just about finish with this, you might have an eye less on your kids at the moment and more towards retirement. That might be really imminent or kind of maybe 10 years, 20 years down the line. What are you going to spend your retirement doing? And I just want to give you an encouragement of one person in church who's recently taken a big step on purpose to try and give themselves more fully to the work of the Lord. Michael was working as a lawyer and he's decided to come and work particularly as an honorary associate at church. And here's some of the things that he said about that decision. He said, in the second season of my life, I wanted to avail more of my time and energy honoring the Lord, serving him rather than myself, and doing things that would have eternal value. Second slide. If there's anything that I can do which helps a friend find their way to Jesus or encourages them to grow in their faith, hope, and love in the Lord, I'd be glad. Let me finish with this once more. I'll give you the big point. Because the resurrection is real, do you believe that? Give yourself fully to the work of the Lord. I'll pray and then we'll keep on praying. God, I ask that you would help us to give our lives to things that are not in vain. I ask for helpful things that we've just said that they would stick and they would swim around in our brains and they would change our hearts and that actually lead us to new endeavors for you. I ask for people who are feeling discouraged in their work that you would give them encouragement today, knowing that their labor in the Lord is not in vain. I ask for people who are not even sure the resurrection is for real yet, that you would bring us to a point of faith. And God, I ask that anything that was unhelpful today, that it would just kind of fall to the floor and that you'd help your word to change us and transform us. And everyone who agreed said,